Now you should listen to this, because this concerns you.
Headed for the door. And I wouldn't walk through anymore. And if I never ever woke again. It's almost worth it.
Hello, friends and neighbors. This is Dave Slusher. This is the Evil Genius Chronicles for Friday, August 19th, 2005. It's exciting times here. We're getting very, very close to the one-year anniversary of this here shenanigan. 1 year. Holy crap. Can that even be? Does that even seem possible? No, it does not seem possible. Not to me, at least. Well, I don't know. Alternately, it seems like, yes, absolutely. I feel every day of that year. And in other ways, it seems like it's flown by. But anyway, you are listening to the Evil Genius Chronicles. This is going to be a special show. The whole show is going to be an interview with Jonathan Colton and his music. But first, got a little business. One, we got to thank the Gentle Readers. They're the ones who provide the music from almost day one, maybe even from day one. I'll have to check the tape. But Gentle Readers are on board with us here. GentleReaders.com. Thank you, Gentle Readers. Thank you, Gentle Readers. And we have our sponsor to thank. That's the iPod Observer. The folks at the Mac Observer said, you know what? We have an observing proficiency, but we are not observing enough things. So why don't we, in addition to the Macintosh, let's turn our keen powers of observation towards the iPod. And they did it. It's at iPodObserver.com. Dave Hamilton, who you may know from the Mac Geek Gab podcast, cut loose with the dogs of observation. And now you can go to iPod Observer at iPodObserver.com and thank them for me for helping buy stuff like my brand new Behringer mixer. And their sponsorship pays the bandwidth, helps me buy a little equipment, and generally keeps the arms race of the podcast running. There you go. Thank you, iPod Observer, iPodObserver.com. All right. Rather than having some shenanigans, let's just get right into this. We have a lot of interview and a lot of song to play. So, Jonathan Colton, 1 second. Had a little cough there. Jonathan Colton has done the soundtrack for the newest issue of Popular Science, and I interviewed him talking about, I don't know why, I just completely lost my train of thought. So I talked to Jonathan Colton last weekend, and the name of this kind of EP, Our Bodies, Ourselves, Our Cybernetic Arms. And you'll hear all about it. But we're going to start with the song that we talk about first. From that EP, Popular Science issue, this is the song, Womb with a View.
They were so small when we met. I still remember all night. Button eyes and a tail, I couldn't tell, female or male. I caught your eye through the glass, I waved with my flipper. You looked away, kind of shy when you smiled, my world broke. Something is calling me on. Maybe by morning I'll be gone. Maybe when we get outside, we'll both still remember. Maybe someday we will meet on the street.
Let's talk about this Popular Science kind of EP, the set of five songs that you've done for the new issue of Popular Science magazine. How did that come about? I mean, what brilliant bastard had this notion in the first place?
Well, it was actually the editor-in-chief who I know through, I guess, some social circles, and also I wrote an article for them about building a little hobby robot. A while ago, and sort of kept in touch, and then he said, you know, we were playing poker, and he said we should hire you as contributing troubadour for the magazine, and you should write a theme song for Popular Science. I said, okay, do you think that's a good idea? And turns out he was serious, and so he was sort of. The wheels were spinning. He was thinking of a way to actually use music with the magazine, and you know, he heard me. He came out to see me play, and I have a bunch of sort of techie subject songs anyway. And he said, you know, why don't you write a bunch of songs to go with this next issue? So the idea was born.
Now, how when the direction, so that your songs match up with stories that are in the issue.
That's right.
So how explicit were they? And did they say, I want a fetal breakup song? Or did they just say, I want something involving early life? Or
yeah, well, what they did was they, you know, as they were working on the articles, they would send me as much as they knew, whether they had pieces of the articles or they just knew what it was going to be about. And at some point, they actually sent me the nearly finished text. Which I actually tried not to read because I didn't want to sort of lock myself into some place that I didn't want to be. So I would sort of skim it and get the gist of what it was about, and then just sort of see what happened. But the, you know, they were very nice. You know, they said, you know, for instance, here's the example you brought up. Here's the article is, you know, will we eventually be able to have a artificial womb so that babies may be grown, I guess you might say, outside of the human body. And to me, that was pretty obviously a fetal breakup song. I mean, what else are you going to write about?
So artistically, from your standpoint, given this kind of, you know, you've got, I assume they gave you pretty big leeway. Right.
Yeah.
They didn't say, well, you know, you don't go too far, you know, keep it, you know, simple, or keep it a, you know, acoustic song or whatever. They just said, here's the article, go nuts.
Right.
Yeah. So now, did having the structure of the article that you have to kind of link up with, on the one hand, it seems like that would make it hard because now you've got to match up with it. On the other hand, it seems like it can make the act of writing a song easier by giving you a constraint and a framework within which you have to work.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's sort of how I write best, I find, is when I'm given a constraint. You know, when I was younger and sort of angst-ridden teenager, it was very easy to just write about whatever came into my head, and I had a lot to say. But, you know, now that I'm a little older, you know, I don't always have that inspiration. So I find that when I'm when I actually give myself a task, and, you know, when I say, you know, it's going to be about this, here's going to be the story, and then I write to that, it's almost like I can see, I can imagine what the song is going to be like before I write it, and then I just sort of write to match what's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually is much easier for me to write songs that way. So, you know, as long as I don't get, which is, and this is why I didn't want to actually read the articles all the way through, as long as I don't get too much detail about it, because I still need to be able to sort of spin off in different directions as I'm writing.
Mm-hmm. So, like, in the nerdy sense, it's about collapsing the search space. You don't have the entire universe to write about. You've just got this thing, and now right. Now it's a solvable problem, kind of.
Exactly. I just click, I'm feeling lucky, and then I go there.
Now, when you did these songs, you know, I was kind of following along on your weblog. Did you go and do a tracking at a professional studio, or was this all like a home recorded?
No, this is all home studio stuff. All the recordings I've made have been in my home studio.
I was actually surprised when I heard the songs how elaborate some of them were. I mean, I was expecting kind of a more simple presentation, and you got some serious production. Like, I Feel Fantastic, and there's a lot more stuff in there than I thought would be there.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm a serious man, Dave. There's, you know, the computers can do amazing things. Mm-hmm. I will say that to you. And mark my words, they're going to be very, very big one of these days. You know, I have Pro Tools LE, and I've got Soundtrack, and I've got a Mac, and I've got some microphones and some instruments and some loops. So mm-hmm. it's like, sky's the limit, you know? It truly is amazing what you can do now that you couldn't do even 5 years ago.
So do you have a full band set up? Like, do you have a drum kit and record all those things, or are those computer drums?
No, the drums are always recorded loops, because, you know, I live in an apartment in Brooklyn, so I don't think my wife and child would take very kindly to me banging on the skins all day and all night. But yeah, the drums are looped, and the rest of the stuff is me playing. So, you know, I have a few guitars and some shakers and mm-hmm. cowbells and such. Yeah, the drums are all looped, though.
So, you know, I'll go ahead and play favorites. I think I Feel Fantastic. At least having, I don't know, I've listened to all of them, you know, three or four times a piece, and I think that's the one that is jumping out at me as the one I like best at this stage. It's just got that whole, you know, I have a big love for kind of motor mouth rock, you know, where the right. lyrics come fast and furious. I love that.
Yeah. And I like that one too. My favorite thing about this song is that the guy is obviously so screwed up and he has no idea. That's what I love about it.
And it kind of, you know, so I'm not as wild, you know, I'm fairly new to the joy that is you. I guess it's been about a month or two or three since the first time I heard, you know, some of your music. And I came to you through the Little Gray Book.
And I was
I was trying to figure this weird chain of custody of how I even came to that. And I think it was because they published one of those in the PRX feed, which I'm subscribed, you know, my podcatcher gets that. And so I got one of these Little Great Book things just from PRX. And then I went and sought out, you know, the Little Great Book feed. And then I heard more of you. And
right.
It's this kind of tenuous connection. But then once I really got into your music, it really kind of knocked me out with the...
Oh, well, thank you.
I mean, on top of the music, the kind of the cleverness of the lyrics is... It's striking. I mean, it's lyrics in general are pretty stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, to have this kind of, you know, your lyrics are kind of like the way, say, a Seinfeld episode is plotted, you know? There's a lot of reference, and they tie together, and they hang together, and things mean things, and they hook up with other things.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you. I mean, you know, and I think that is because the... you know, because I do put myself in these difficult positions, like, and it always happens this way, you know, when I decide, okay, I'm going to write a fetal breakup song, and I, you know, have a couple of lines, and I'm like, oh, that'll be hilarious, and then I start actually writing, and I'm like, oh, God, this is impossible, I'm never going to get through this, you know, so there's always that awful moment in the middle where I'm like, there's nothing at all. And then I sort of reach out in desperation and find a bunch of stuff and sort of squish it together. And so, you know, I think because I do such odd subjects, I end up with much deeper stuff than I would if I were actually writing about, you know, myself and real things.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to stop right there. And we're going to play one of the songs that we just mentioned. This is, again, from the Our Bodies, Ourselves, Our Cybernetic Arms with the Popular Science business. This is the song, I Feel Fantastic.
Get up early when the sleeping pill wakes me. I take a wake up pill to fill with energy. I power on hard, never check my messages. But I don't have any messages. Take a driving pill and head to my car. I drive around it because work isn't very far. I call my phone and I check my messages, but I don't have any messages. All I know, driving on drugs feels better when they're prescription. All I know, the world looks beautiful, the world looks so damn beautiful. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now, right now. Work is anything but quiet these days. I try to mitigate my concentration haze. I can see the day unfold in front of me, so I take the stairs and hit the gym. The phone is ringing when I get to my desk. The sting is now a sharp pain in my chest. So I take a calm and next and just chill. And then it's time for lunch again. All I know is work is easy when you don't stress out about deadlines. All I know is I take my medicine. I always take my medicine. And I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. Right now. Right now. Right now. Over, but I can't stay to work late. Gotta leave and get ready for my second date with a pretty girl that I met at the pharmacy. Right in the prescription line, I take a pill for my social anxiety. I get a table and a nice bottle of Chablis. Now it's getting late and there's still no sign of her. I have another glass of wine. All I know is the wine lasts longer when you don't gotta share it with someone. All I know is the steak tastes better when I take my steak tastes better pill. Fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. Right now.
I believe the very first one of your songs I heard was Dance, Sotirios Johnson Dance.
Yeah.
And so, and it seems like, is there, are, the one that was in Little Grey Book, is that different from the MP3 that you have up in your site? Because it seems like they have different lyrics, because the Terry Gross lyric is not.
Yeah, that's a good catch, yeah. There are different lyrics. When I first read it, I didn't have the Terry Gross lyric. And then and then we actually did a Little Grey Book show in Philadelphia. When we were down there, John Hodgman, who's the guy who created Little Grey Books, said, you know, you really should, since we're in Philadelphia, you really need to change that last verse so it has something to do with Terry Gross. Just mention Terry Gross. And I was like, ah, I don't know. And then I wrote that verse, and when I mentioned Terry Gross, the crowd went wild.
Well, I had the same experience. I fell out of my chair.
Well, and of course, there in Philadelphia, they have no idea who Soterios Johnson is. So it was sort of a strange choice of a song. So I'm very glad we had that Terry Gross lyric in there. Otherwise, I'm not so sure they would have known what was going on.
Well, the you help sell it with the kind of the explanation up front, and then the whoever that is for you, that's your Soterios Johnson, the
exactly.
comforting voice on the radio.
Yeah, everybody's got that guy.
Well, here's the question is, have you ever heard from Soterios Johnson?
You know, I haven't. And I'm frankly a little disappointed. I have heard from people who work with Soterios Johnson. The engineer, the producer of WNYC's Morning Edition actually sent me an email and said that Soterios had been on vacation for a couple of weeks and he came back, and on the day that he came back, they opened the show by playing that song on the radio as a surprise to him. So I know that he's heard it. And I would love to know what he thinks of it.
It seems like that's going to go one of two ways and nothing in between.
I think that you're right. I mean, you know, who knows? The thing is, he's reading the news on NPR, so who can tell if he has a sense of humor? No one knows.
Exactly.
He's not allowed to show it.
It sounds like, you know, the stories you hear about, you know, Martin Short or Dave Thomas or those guys who do lots of impressions who then, you know, find themselves on an airplane next to the person that they do.
Exactly. I know. I mean, I kind of do want to hear from him, but I kind of fear hearing from him as well.
And was that one, did you write that one, so you wrote it first and then it happened to fit with that little Grey Book lecture?
Well, I wrote it for, what was that? Yeah, because we were doing a show about the radio. Mm-hmm. Here in New York, and so I actually wrote it for that episode, and then we sort of did an altered version of that show. Oh, you know what? No, that's not true. Actually, I wrote it for a little Grey Book show that we did in New York called How to Lead a Double Life or Death. So that was about double lives, and it just happened to be about a radio personality. So then when we did that radio show in Philadelphia, we were able to sort of fit that in.
So you got a break. You didn't have to write a whole new song that week.
Yeah, exactly. Plus it was in a completely different city, so I could get away with it.
All right, we're going to stop right there. And now what we're going to do is we're going to play the song in question. We're going to play Dance, Soterios Johnson Dance, which I can't even say the damn title of the song without laughing. I think it's so funny. So that's what we're going to hear right now. We're going to play, you know, we discussed in the thing there are two versions. We're going to play the version from the Little Grey Book. So this is from the Little Grey Book lectures. This is the live version of Dance, Soterios Johnson Dance.
This is a song about Soterios Johnson. Many of you may not know who he is. In my town of New York City, the NPR station that I listen to is WNYC, and the local anchor, his name is Soterios Johnson, and when my alarm clock goes off in the morning, I generally get to listen to him for about an hour. And it's just, you know, time, weather, and then he says, "This is Soterios Johnson." It's a very soothing, sort of cyclical way to wake up. Perhaps some of you have that experience with a local news person yourself. I don't know who that might be, but imagine that when I'm saying Soterios Johnson, I'm saying that person's name instead. And then maybe you will enjoy this song.
Voice like honey, no one else could fill his shoes. The time and the weather, the headlines and the local news. He lays it down with perfection and grace. Done by noon, he goes home to his place where he sleeps and he waits for the night. Just before midnight, he gets up, gets out of bed. A can of Red Bull, a tab of X to clear his head.
He shoots his cuffs, now he's headed downtown. Picks up one life, puts another one down. And his body hums as the music's playing. Dance, Sotirios Johnson, dance. It's a cold world, nobody understands. The feeling you can't keep inside. Go, Sotirios Johnson, go. All the club kids are watching you glow stick. Glow with the light of a truth you can't hide. That the news is the news, but the dance goes on forever. He shimmies his shoulders, undulates his slender hips. Arms akimbo, Jagger-esque, he pouts his lips. The crowd has formed, they are gathering round just to hear the incredible sound of a genius smashing expectations. Dance, Sotirios Johnson, dance. It's a cold world, nobody understands. The feeling you can't keep inside. Go, Sotirios Johnson, go. All the club kids are watching you glow stick. Glow with the light of a truth you can't hide. That the news is the news, but the dance goes on forever. He's dancing, and he's a machine like no one they've ever seen. He's grooving, he's living a dream. Magic fades as the sun comes up. It's time he goes. A hand on his shoulder, he turns around. It's Terry Gross. She takes his hand, shakes her body just so. He holds her close, he will never let go. As the room explodes, they dance like angels. Dance, Sotirios Johnson, dance. It's a cold world, nobody understands. The feeling you can't keep inside. Go, Sotirios Johnson, go. All the club kids are watching you glow stick. Glow with the light of a truth you can't hide. That the news is the news, but the dance goes on. News is the news, but the dance goes on. News is the news, but the dance goes on forever.
Jonathan. Now, how did you get hooked up with the little gray book lectures? And kind of, were you there at the beginning of this thing?
Yeah, I was. Actually, John Hodgman is... he and I went to college together, so he's a very old friend. I've known him forever, and he was a sort of frustrated literary agent, and then he was a freelance writer, and he was, you know, he was seeing all these literary readings, and they were all very boring. Until the day that he went to a literary reading where a guy named Arthur Bradford read a story and then smashed a guitar, and John said, that is it. That is what we need to do. That's what literary reading should be. So, you know, he decided to start this series and do readings, but also have PowerPoint presentations and people in seagull costumes and, you know, guys like me playing silly songs on the guitar.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I like about it is it seems kind of like the demented cousin of This American Life.
Right.
Where I love This American Life, and like early on in this, people compared me to Ira Glass, which was the most flattering thing I could ever imagine. But I do have one problem with it, which is that show gets so hyper intellectualized and so self referential that it's all ego and no id sometimes. And your show is kind of like the id that it lacks. You know, it's funny. It's got some of the same kinds of insights and kind of, you know, looks into the human condition, but, you know, you smash a guitar.
Right. Sort of the bizarro world to This American Life.
Exactly.
Well, and that's sort of the point, too. And the, you know, I think John's work and my work complement each other in good ways, because we both end up approaching truth through ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think it's like if you veer away and do something crazy, you can't help but come back to something that is somehow even truer or more moving than it could have been if you just dealt with it head on.
Well, that's not unlike the songs that you wrote for Popular Science, which, you know, I've got a deep background in the science fiction world, you know, science fiction literature, not film, but there's a strong historical tradition going back to, you know, H.G. Wells and Jules Verne of using this and crazy ideas to explore the contemporary condition and in some cases use it as sort of a test bed for how are we going to explore our own future and how are we going to feel about it when this happens. And, you know, the songs are kind of jokey, but there's a core of truth in all those songs, too.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of it that way, but it's very much like that sci-fi aesthetic. And I find that they're best when I actually get to a point where I really feel for the character that I'm singing about. Like when, you know, when I'm talking about the guy who's afraid of his robot, you know, and gets his arms altered so that he can intimidate his robot. I'm in a way I'm really serious. You know, I'm serious about that guy. Mm-hmm. I try to put myself in his place. Like, it would feel awful. You know, so it's like, I don't know. I do like that, though, because it does tend to unlock things that I don't think I could otherwise get to.
So now, you, when I very first emailed you and asked you for permission to play your songs in my podcast, you were happy about it, and you said that you loved podcasts. Around that same time, I guess, was when I started listening to the Little Gray Books. The podcast version, which has the kind of, I don't know what you call it, like the interstitial material with you and, mm-hmm. and Hodgman kind of. And I love the way you guys do that, like where you just, it gets back to some of the power of radio drama because you guys get, you know, this cheesy ping sound effect. Yeah. And you say, "We're here on the submarine," and that's it. Ping! We're here on the submarine.
Please believe us. We are actually on a submarine.
Four words and a sound effect, stage is set. And that's something I love about radio drama. And, yeah. You know, and I love the fact that you guys are kind of, you know, it's old school in a way, and I love that.
Well, that's John's influence. John is really the radio man. I mean, when he did these shows, he's the Little Gravo shows, he's always been thinking of them as radio shows. You know, a lot of that influence comes from him. You know, he's the one who says, no, we'll just put some sound effects of submarines and then we'll be on a submarine. And he's absolutely right. I think it works. And it's a lot of fun.
Now, what does this, when you guys do that, does it bring anything to the kind of art that you're doing, this new sort of media without restrictions? And I know for myself, it brings a lot to what I'm doing. You know, I couldn't do this if I had to go broadcast. You know, the potty mouth is one aspect of it, but just the whole thing, the kind of lack of format and being able to completely change what it is you do from week to week.
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, we've been doing this live show for a while, I think for 3 years or maybe more. And we used to do it more frequently than we do. We've kind of trailed off a little bit, but, you know, that when podcasting first came across my radar, and I put two and two together and decided, well, obviously we need to start doing podcasts. When that light went off, you know, it was very exciting. And then we did the first one. You know, who knows how many people listened to it, you know, six of our friends or something like that. But mm-hmm. who cares? Because when we were done with it, we said, oh my God, that is how to do it. Like, there's no audience. Like, I mean, there is an audience, but like, in a way, it was very freeing because it was, we sort of, doing the live show, we're so concerned with the audience because we need, you know, you need the feeling in the room has got to be right, and mm-hmm. people need to feel comfortable enough to laugh. And so, in a way, it's very constraining. And it makes you very nervous. But when we do these things, it's like nobody's listening. It's like we're just doing it in the privacy of our own home. Mm-hmm. And we know that somebody's going to listen to it later. So it's like very freeing. I love it.
And in there's a fairly obvious gain in that one of the songs I played, the first episode of yours that I played your music in, I played First of May.
Right.
Well, that song is not going to get played on the radio.
You are probably right about that.
And you couldn't even bleep it out because if you bleep out the things you can't say, there's no particular point in even playing the song.
So, it really depends on the vulgarity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get to say, you can say, you know, outdoor fucking starts today. No problem.
Right. Well, so far, just wait until the crackdown comes.
Well, you know. All right. And so now before Jonathan and I get into a discussion of the future of whether there will be a crackdown, let's get in the mood of the crackdown and avoiding the crackdown and, you know, of sticking it to the man, which is always, when even when not stated, is always the implicit theme of this show. Let's stick it to the man. Let's stick it to everybody, really, with Jonathan's song, First of May. This is from his album, Smoking Monkey, which, by the way, you can buy at CD Baby. If this song rocks your world, you should go and buy this album, like I will be doing this weekend. I desperately need to buy these albums. I'm going to buy this one. This is First of May.
This morning, I had a scone and a large house blend. Then a little conversation with my squirrel and chipmunk friends. I said, I'm sick and tired of winter, and I wish that it was spring. Then a little fella named Robin Redbreast began to sing. And he sang, ooh, child, what'd you think of cold? Gonna last forever. Ooh, child, now's the time for all the people to get together outside. Cause it's the first of May, first of May. Outdoor fucking starts today. So bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite lady. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in flagrante delicto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside. I thanked him for the information. I cried a little when he flew away. I watched an episode of the People's Court and I tried to plan my day. Called up my old lady, she wasn't home, so I called my girl. I asked her if she'd like to join me as I entertain the world. And I said, ooh, child, I'll bring a blanket and I promise I will brush the ants off. Ooh, child, you're gonna like it when we're taking each other's pants off outside. Starts today. So bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite lady. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in flagrante delicto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside. We went to the park together. We were walking in the midday sun. Met all kinds of people and we fucked everyone. We fucked the lady who sells ice cream. We fucked a man with a tan sharp head. Everyone who needed fucking, well, they got fucked today. So come on, ooh, child, open your mind and your heart. Feel the spirit moving through you. Ooh, child, you feel the warmth of the love when I stick it to you outside. Cause it's the first of May, first of May. Outdoor fucking starts today. Bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite lady. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in flagrante delicto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside. Fucking outside. Fucking outside.
I don't know. How long is it going to last? How long is it going to be? How long are we going to be free to do this stuff and unregulated? Forever?
I hope forever. I mean, I will do what I can to make it forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to me, there was a big wave came over me in the late 70s, early 80s when we got cable in our house. And I lived out in Nowhere, Kansas.
Yeah.
And suddenly, we had access to HBO, and we were seeing these things that would be so hokey by today's standards, like Red Fox HBO specials.
Right.
And it was just the most amazing thing. It
was mind-blowing entertainment.
Oh, my God. It's like, listen to what this guy's saying.
Yeah.
And, it's not unlike, you know, what Lenny Bruce brought to the table is just like what we were talking about before. Sometimes there's a truth you can't get to any other way except through vulgarity and obscenity.
Right.
And so it can be gratuitous, and probably 95% of it is, you know.
But sure.
Sometimes it's essential,
and
it's a tool to get deeper into the human condition. And if you strip away the gratuitous, you strip away that, and that's a value that you really lose.
Yeah. Even though maybe a small percentage of the usage to get rid of it all is not the way to go. It's just like file sharing too, you know. Most of people trading MP3s, you know, probably some kind of stealing, but a lot of it, I don't know, not so much, mm-hmm. You know. So there's shades of gray, and obviously you can't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Well, now let's get to this as an indie artist. Let me float a mild. I might have to put on the tinfoil hat, but I've got a conspiracy theory about file sharing, which is that the major label crackdowns and the RIAA crackdown on file sharing is always presented as stopping piracy and stopping kind of them hemorrhaging money because we're losing money. I've always thought that is not the primary motive. That's the public face. I think what they want is to avoid a world in which they're not in the center of distribution, because that is the soul of their business, is distribution.
Yeah. That rings very true. I mean, you know, the truth is, I don't think anybody knows what the effects of file sharing are on the money that actually comes into record companies, because it's a complicated equation. And, you know, the record companies, of course, say they're losing tons of money. There was some economist who did some sort of study who determined that they were not, in fact, losing money, that there was actually a benefit, and, you know, the piracy and the benefit offset each other. But you're right. I think they are basically terrified of what's happening, because everything's changing. Everything's changing very fast, and they are losing control. And control is slipping out of their hands and into the hands of consumers, and that they don't want that at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to control. They want to control every aspect of it the way they used to. And more and more, that's not going to happen.
So, from your perspective as an indie artist, I know you had some posts recently on your weblog, kind of encouraging people who are enjoying the music to, in some way or another, kick in the dough, to ante up, buy the CD or donate or do something.
Right.
Did those appeals, did that net anything, or was it kind of the same sort of ambient freeload level that it always has been?
You know, it did. I did get a bunch of extra donations that I may not otherwise have gotten. And then I immediately felt bad, which maybe is silly, but, I was having sort of a bad day, and the sales were down that month for whatever reason. And I was feeling depressed, and I was just sort of really angry at all the people who download the stuff and don't give anything back. But then I was thinking about it, like, well, what do I expect? You know, I have all these free songs in there. I say, please download these.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if you saw later, I actually ran some numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Based on all of the, every K that gets downloaded, assuming that all of those are songs, which they're probably not, but, figuring out how many songs were downloaded in a month, and then tabulating, you know, adding up all the money that I got from CD sales, donations, all that stuff, and then just doing a little division, I figured out that it was actually netting about 2 or 3 cents per song download.
Per free download.
Yeah, per free download. So it's kind of an interesting number. It was actually higher than I expected it to be. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a huge number.
Right.
But I think if that increases when the volume, I mean, if that stays level when the volume goes up, then we got something.
Right.
You know, and I think major artists get, what do they get, $1 per CD?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if there's 10 songs on a CD, that's 10 cents a song, but they got to pay their manager, they got to pay their agent, they got to pay their stylist, whatever they have.
Right.
So I actually think I'm doing okay.
Right.
Even though I'm practically giving everything away, which is interesting to me. I did not expect that to be the case.
No, those are interesting numbers. And, you know, at this moment, I'm one of the freeloaders because I haven't bought the CDs from CD Baby yet. But one of the other things, too, is I think you might see a kind of a delayed reaction, because there's this sort of, I think there will be a threshold crossed. There's a certain point at which there's enough exposure that, you know, you hear one song, you may not go for it, but as you kind of filter out there, you might find that you've kind of hit the activation energy for enough people to actually pony up or buy a CD or what have you.
Right, the critical mass that causes the Jonathan Colton explosion.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
All right.
And I should point out, you are not a freeloader, because you in fact play the stuff on the podcast, which I count as paying me back, because
like
that means
free
somebody
promotion.
Else is going to hear. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Then karmically we're okay, but you're still going to get some money. So. All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and thanks for the music, which I love. I really dig it, and the first time I played your music, I got a really strong reaction from the audience, and people loved it. So,
great. Well, I can't thank you enough for having me on the show and for playing the music.
All right, take care.
All right, thanks, Dave.
All right, that was the interview with Jonathan Colton, and man, he was so much fun to talk to. You heard how kind of giggly things got after a while. It was the whole thing was just a blast, and so I had a great old time. And so thank you, Jonathan. And so, you know, I'm not shitting around. I'm going to CD Baby. He's got a CD and an EP. Buying them both this weekend, getting them shipped. Love this music, and you know what the hell? Go out and buy Popular Science too. It would be cool if it was like the Jonathan Colton songs led to the the largest single issue sales in a long time. That would be pretty freaking cool. So we're gonna go out with one more song, and this one is actually, this is not quite the not quite as screwball as some of the stuff, but we're gonna play one last song, and this is from Jonathan Colton. This is his song Screwed. If I can get it to play, we're gonna have the Jonathan Colton song Screwed.
Some dumb Indian sold Manhattan for $7 and a bottle of booze. Went out drinking and came home sober and told his friends the good news. Bernadette saw the Virgin Mary, but no one else could, and everyone tried. All her friends said that she'd gone crazy. She joined a convent and died. I'm the Indian, I am Bernadette. I'm the sucker who doesn't know it yet. I just signed it, I never review all the fine print you wrote out. Now I guess I'm screwed. Indiana Jones liked to travel. He took his friend on a treasure hunt trip. Did a favor, threw him the idol, but never got back his will. Boba Fett was a bounty hunter. He did his job well. He brought back his man. He was clutching his unspent money when he fell down a hole in the sand. I am Dr. Jones. I am Boba Fett. I'm the sucker who doesn't know it yet. I just signed it, I never reviewed all the fine print you wrote out. Now I guess I'm screwed. It's bad news for me again. It never ends. I got no prize inside my happy meal. I got lots of money. I got lots of friends. Just like Meatloaf got a record deal. Alexander Graham Bell made telephones. His friend Watson was out all the time. Called him up just to chat. Nobody home. Never got back his dime. Once upon a time, France was beautiful. Had a queen who gave everyone cake. Then the people got mad and killed her dead. Took back all they could take. I am Graham Bell, Marie Antoinette. I'm the sucker who doesn't know it yet. I just signed it, I never reviewed all the fine print you wrote out. Now I guess I'm screwed.
That was Screwed from Jonathan Coulton, capping off our interview with the man himself. And what fun. It's kind of a longish episode, but I hope you all think it was worthwhile. Had a blast. Had an absolute blast. And I really wanted to do this all week. It's killing me because all week long, you know, I really wanted to do this. I had the interview done last Saturday and just too busy to get it done. And so... it's been a week fraught with anticipation, if you know what I mean. So, thanks for listening. Send me any feedback that you have. If you liked this episode, if you dig in the Coulton explosion, let me know. dslusher@gmail.com. The show notes will be, they'll be very simple for this episode. Another beauty of it. But they'll be up at evilgeniuschronicles.org. You can leave me a comment on the weblog. And, you know... meet me back here later. We'll hang out, you know. You bring some chips, I'll bring some beer, we'll hang out. So thanks for listening, and I will catch you again next time. And thank you to Jonathan Coulton for a fun time. We will catch you again. Bye.